College leaders everywhere are facing challenging decisions in this modern era.
Have we got a stadium?
Yes.
Have we got a college?
Yes.
Well, we can't support both. Tomorrow we start tearing down the college.
And decisions on the geographical makeup of the rebuilding Pac-12 haven't been easy either.
Las Vegas, Nevada.
That's how I got to Memphis. New Orleans.
UTSA, anyone?
Anybody going to San Antonio?
How about GCU?
Phoenix, Arizona.
Moraga?
The bells of St. Mary's.
However the geography ultimately looks, it's great to know the Pac-12 is coming back. And as it does, and when it does, the Joe Beaver Show will be along for the ride, striking that hopeful note.
These are the good old days. These are the good old days.
Brace yourselves, amigos.
Now, the Joe Beaver Show on 1240 Joe Radio.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome in. Mike Parker with John Warren. Last week was one of the busier ones we've ever had. And I'll put that, I'm not using the royal we. I might almost say it's one of the busiest weeks I've ever had, but it was busy for both of us, John. The prep for the Joe Beaver Show and all the guests we had on, they were wonderful. But that requires a good deal of preparation and reading and
correct,
the combination of getting ready for basketball and football. We didn't really, I felt like with a pretty large guest list, we didn't really have a lot of time to kind of sit and visit with each other,
yeah,
with callers and texters and so on. And so I hope we can make amends a little bit today. We have a guest at 12:30, Oregon State volleyball coach Lindsey Bohanek. And thanks to some sort of inside baseball stuff from Rich Burke, who has called every home match in this 2025 season and will be calling the last few home matches. Senior Day is coming up this Sunday, even with several other home matches still to come. We'll talk to Lindsey a little bit about the why and the wherefore of a Senior Day. Maybe it's the only weekend day except for the Thanksgiving weekend. We'll talk to Lindsey about all of that. But Rich has passed along some information that in calling all of the matches, and he's called them solo, and as I said during the radio broadcast of the Beaver basketball game last night, looking across at Rich working with Mike Montgomery, two people I have great respect and affection for and admiration for. Rich is a longtime friend. Mike Montgomery I have a great deal of admiration for. But they were sitting there doing the game last night, but I said of Rich, I talked about Monty being a Hall of Famer and going into the Hall this weekend in Missoula. Lisa Tinkle will be going up to be part of that because she has a team being inducted. Wayne and Lisa have already been inducted as individuals, but they both have teams being honored in Missoula this weekend. And Mike Montgomery going into the Hall. I talked a little bit about that on the broadcast, but also said, and Montgomery sitting alongside Rich Burke, the most versatile broadcaster I know. And yeah. I think he is.
Yeah, he's done everything. All the way from Olympics to every Beaver sport there is. Volleyball, baseball, of course,
wrestling,
gymnastics.
And gymnastics, yeah.
I say that because I couldn't even begin to try to do gymnastics. He's done...
he's done basketball and football.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what he told us he's done Olympic-wise. He and Ted Robinson both do a lot of Olympics, so really,
We're blessed to have them.
He's great.
And anyway, Rich gave me some... In talking, I told him I was going to have Coach Bohanek on today, and I just said, hey, I have no problem asking for help in a sport that I don't know a great deal about. And he gave me some good stuff that we can get into a little bit with Coach Bohanek at 12:30. But I'm kind of looking forward to talking about some things today, John, and just I hope that the listeners if you're engaging with the show at all, that and maybe you don't call very often, but have some thoughts about kind of where we are. We have a little bit more time to breathe and to take some time with texts and calls. So my hope is you're willing to participate with us in that vein today. And we'll kind of have a little more openness this week. Part of why last week was so busy had to do with the opponent. An outfit known as Washington State University that we have a little familiarity with. I would say it's a little bit on the other end of the spectrum when it comes to the Sam Houston Bearcats, Johnny. My knowledge level, and it's often been the case for the teams we've been playing this year, I don't know much about them at all, really. And you told me, and I'm working on it, but you told me that somebody sent you an article about their head coach, which I find interesting.
I forgot to forward that to you.
Well, I asked you to, and you said you were trying to. But I'd like to see it. And I don't want to spend too much time on it and create a, oh, boy, what kind of team is this? And who's their coach? And what are they doing? You know, boy, they must be really bad. Well, that isn't the angle. But I did find it interesting what apparently one of our listeners found and forwarded to you, and you'll forward it to me or send it to the text line about. I don't think it's something he said this year, but apparently in the offensive coordinator experience of Phil Longo, the current head coach at Sam Houston State, the upshot of the article was he once said when a receiver asked, what am I supposed to do on this play? And the answer was a terse, just get open, or something to that effect, which on a certain level, maybe that's good coaching. You know what I'm saying? Maybe that's the best thing to say. It's a little bit like, like Harpo Marx, the great Marx brother, and I hope to go up on Sunday, November 16th, getting back from Tulsa to see a showing of A Night at the Opera at a Salem Theater downtown, a big screen version on the whatever anniversary it would be, 1935. 1935 to 2025, 90th anniversary of the release of Night at the Opera. But Harpo at one point asked his director, and Harpo, the silent clown and brilliant clown, genius of a comedian, but Harpo asked the director, getting a little too full of himself was Harpo, because he'd been told he was some sort of mystical, magical character, and Alexander Wolcott and others were telling him such. So Harpo asks his director, what's my character's motivation in this scene? And the director essentially said, just be funny. You know, do what you always do. Be funny. So maybe the receiver who asked the question in that room, and I've yet to read the article, I'm sort of paraphrasing what you said you read or what the texter said. Maybe there was a certain degree of complexity to the route, and it almost became a Jack Ramsey to Billy Ray Bates kind of moment, which you and I have celebrated over the years, when the great professorial Dr. Jack Ramsey was drawing up a play in the memorable Billy Ray Bates era in Blazer basketball, so wonderfully chronicled in David Halberstam's The Breaks of the Game. Billy comes from out of nowhere and is making buckets and dunking and doing things just as the phrase goes, freak of nature. I mean, he was an unbelievable force of nature on the floor. So late in the game, Dr. Jack has the grease board out or whatever and is drawing up a play and all of that. And you screen here and then the back and then you cut here and then we'll flash this way. And all of this verbiage. And Jack at the end, as the team breaks huddle and is heading back to the floor, Dr. Jack looks at Billy Ray Bates and says, just go make a play. Just go score. And he did, and the Blazers won. Good coaching. You know, all of that was window dressing almost for a guy just being an athlete, a basketball player, and making a play, reading the defense, and attacking and scoring and helping the Blazers win a game. Maybe the upshot of the whole Phil Longo, just get open, is something along those lines. I need to read the rest of the story, but the upshot of the column that was sent to you by a texter was that maybe some of the complexities and intricacies were even lost on him as an OC. I don't know, but I do know they're struggling. They're not a good football team, and their defense in particular. They have some offensive firepower. We're going to learn a lot more about them, but they are not in the same class as Washington State. So with the Beavers playing the Cougars, we're pulling here, we're pulling from there, we're talking to former players, we're talking to broadcasters, we're talking to writers. We did all of that last week. We may seek someone out from Huntsville, Texas. All I know about Huntsville, and I bet, just as we throw this out in the small world that we live in, John, I doubt whether there's any alumnus of Sam Houston State University living here in the Mid-Valley. I doubt it, but there could be, because we're always surprised by, I didn't go there, but my brother did, or my uncle did, or my dad took a term that, whatever. Huntsville, Texas. Do you know what its nickname is as a city? Have you come across that yet?
No.
As I begin just the beginnings of preparation, Huntsville, Texas, where Sam Houston State University is located about 70 miles north of Houston proper. The prison city. They're known for their high number of correctional institutions.
No.
Yes. The prison city coming to Corvallis.
I sat next to former SID Steve Fink last night.
Oh, I didn't see Doc Fink. I looked up and saw you. Fink was there?
Yeah, he was there for almost the whole first half.
Nice. Good.
He said, believe it or not, I've been to a game at Sam Houston.
No, I don't believe it.
Yeah.
There's no one listening other than Fink who's ever been there.
It was when he was with Montana. They played him in,
okay.
in a playoff game.
He did
or
work up there for a while.
Yeah.
So as we get into open phones and texts, if you have anything to contribute on anything, Game 7 of the World Series, the Beavers win over Washington State, Rob Akey's demeanor, the Beavers playing Sam Houston State, and has anybody ever been to Huntsville, Texas, and been to the prison city and visited the correctional institutions? Maybe even you've been incarcerated in one of them and have good things to say about it. I mean, I don't know. Whatever your level of contribution is, we look forward to hearing from you in open phones and texts. 541-497-5356.
I think you're going to enjoy that article.
Thank you. Is it the one about Sam Houston?
Yeah.
Okay, 541-497-5356. I do know, and just scanning my shelves at home, we have just a million National Geographic magazines in magazine form, and there's always this push to, well, everything's digitized, get rid of. No, I'm going to hold on to them.
Are they in good shape?
They're in pretty good shape for the most part, kind of passed down from aunts and uncles, and then our own subscription for many years lapsed long ago, but we still have many. They're a wonderful source of incredible knowledge about the world. But there is one that I just walking by my shelf, I just shot a glance, and they're not. We don't have them alphabetized, so that's a miserable thing. If somebody, it's like the W.C. Fields filing system in Man on the Flying Trapeze. Opens up the roll-top desk, and there's just nothing but chaos everywhere. His boss says, where's that Jones file? Oh, wait a minute. Why'd somebody put it here? And he's just reaching into this mess. That's how I live my life with my books and my magazines and so on. I kind of know where they are. But there's one on the spine of National Geographic that says Sam Houston. So I pulled it off.
Really?
Yeah, there's a whole article on Sam Houston himself, which I plan on reading before the game Saturday. And I don't want to go too much Bill Walton on talking of Sam Houston during the entire game, but I'm looking forward to learning more about him.
Shouldn't Sam Houston have been in Houston?
Well, it's a good question. It is a good question. He's laid to rest in Huntsville, Texas, and that's why the university is named Sam Houston State University after him. An interesting character. I did glance a little bit and know a little bit here and there about him. He's an interesting cat, that's for sure. And the Bearcats are coming to town. But if anybody has been to Huntsville, or like Doc Fink, been to a game at Sam Houston State in any sport, feel free. 541-497-5356. I do look forward to reading that article. Did you watch the game last night? Did you attend the game last night? Do you have any first impressions of Beaver basketball 2025-26?
Yes, that was...
What are you chuckling about?
Just a couple of texts looking at. But yes, in fact, one of the texts that we have this morning, it makes me laugh, not this last laugh, but it made me laugh when I first saw it. Mike in Salem says, Could you guys ask that the heat be turned down in Gill? Too hot last night. Now, on the floor, it's not too bad.
I heard that from a few folks last night.
When you go upstairs, it is really hot. But that's always been the case. Always. Every time upstairs is hot because heat rises. And I don't know if anybody's ever said anything to management, but it would be nice. Now, maybe they have it turned down, and it's just that much heat rises when you get bodies in the building.
It must have been a little higher than normal because I heard from more people last night than I have in a long time. Boy, kind of warm in here. Boy, hot in here. Kind of warm in here. I mean, I've been going to games there for a long, long time. 27 years calling games, but a lot
Did
of games
you notice
before
any?
Then. And it didn't feel any different to me than normal.
Usually at court level, it's not. But our media level is up, you know, right there above,
yes,
above the walkway, above the upper level. And it's always hot, always really, really hot. And when the place is full, it gets like unbearably
like
hot.
Like old Boston Garden hot.
Yeah. It's
which
it's,
I was never in, but I've heard
the
stories.
The sweat box, yeah. No, it's very, very uncomfortable. Now, last night it was like, well, here we go, another hot game to go to, but I didn't feel it to be any mm-hmm. hotter than usual.
Okay. Well, if you have something, thank you, Mike, and we'll see. I mean, I'll bring it up because I heard more last night about the heat. Oh, my gosh, the heat than I'd ever heard before, quite honestly. You know, for a game that was not, you know, highly attended, I think about 2889 was the official attendance. But if the basketball itself, anything in particular, and did you watch the ESPN Plus broadcast? I rely upon Rich Burke and his great preparation and knowledge of things. I wasn't aware of this, did not have this piece of information on the final play, John, when the long pass was thrown, the next to the last play, after Josiah Lake, with a very adept drive, just kind of reading the defense and waiting, like Hankerson on a zone run, and Evanson Bernard, the best zone runner ever. According to Mike Riley, the best zone runner he ever had. Ev could just, oh, there it is, you know, just kind of probe and be patient and then find the crease of the seam and hit it and go.
Yeah.
Josiah Lake essentially did that last night with that possession, just kind of finessing, looking, waiting, and then found the lane and got to the rim and laid it home. And for them to give up a layup in that situation, that's not good on a team that otherwise I thought was pretty good defensively and pretty physical and made life tough on the Beavs.
Yeah, they were.
In last night's season opener with North Dakota State, the Beavers prevailing. But on the ensuing inbounds pass, what clearly looked to all of us to be a bad call, and it was. Mm-hmm. I talked to Rich and Monty, Mike Montgomery, both said they missed the call. I was waiting for a review to be initiated, expecting it, but this didn't get to me. There was no, I didn't see any memo. Maybe there was, but nobody told me about a rule change. I was just expecting a review
at
courtside.
Explain to me, because I was there and trying to figure out what was the miss part of it. The ball went over the top, through the hands of the receiver, and then were they trying to say out of bounds, foul, or timeout?
Right. It was a good question, because it ended up working out beautifully for David Richmond, the head coach of North Dakota State.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a little bit ticked off the clock, not much.
1.7 was
left.
Yeah,
it was 1.7 left, which is plenty of time to do a lot, you know, quite a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't feel like it, but 1.7 is plenty of time to run a play, catch, put it on the deck, shoot.
Yeah,
I mean,
you
got time to make a basketball play, not just catch and shoot immediately.
Right,
you've got
right.
time to do something. So the Beavers defended it well and survived and came out. Rich wrote me and said, it was a bad call, and this is what I didn't know, and he knew because he's good at what he does in terms of the prep. He probably asked the question. You know, you've got the whole answer the question, jerk, meme and famous moment with John McEnroe. But sometimes, you know, a jerk like, ask the question, jerk, not answer it, ask it. And I didn't know how to ask it. You know, Aristotle said, for a person to succeed in life, you have to know which questions to ask. Okay. He was right thousands of years ago. And I didn't go into last night's first broadcast asking anybody, are there any new rules or points of emphasis or things? And I should have, and I didn't.
Well, they change every year, so
But here's what Rich knows, and he shared this with me. It was a bad call, one that in years past would have been reviewed by the crew and overturned. But there is a new rule this year specific to the situation. The officials were not allowed to review that out-of-bounds call. He said, here, this is him being nice to me. You probably know this, but in case you didn't, he said, in the last 2 minutes of regulation, and in overtime, the officials will instigate their own review of basket interference, goaltending, and restricted area plays. No coach's challenge is needed. However, they cannot, here's the big deal, they cannot initiate their own review of an out-of-bounds play, such as the one we saw last night. And according to Rich, he said this was done to limit the incessant delays which have clogged the end of many games while officials are looking at out-of-bounds plays. So the only way they can review a play is on a coach's challenge. Each coach gets one challenge per game. If they win it, they get one more and only one more back. And they can use that challenge for any of the things we talked about, basket interference, goaltending, out-of-bounds plays at any point in the game. But in order to use a challenge, they have to have a timeout remaining. So you can't just issue a challenge. You got to have a timeout remaining. And when the play happened, the Beavers had used up all their timeouts. So Wayne couldn't ask for a review. So he was stuck in that sense. The call was bad, but there was no mechanism to overturn it. No automatic review at the scores table. I kept waiting for the officials to come over and review it, but they couldn't. Even if they felt, we may not have gotten that one right, there was no mechanism to overturn the call because Wayne didn't have a challenge left. Now, that I found useful and interesting information. So, among other things, we'd love to hear your thoughts about last night's game, what you saw, things that were slightly concerning, whatever else. We're going to go to Mike and Tiger in just a second.
I just missed that. What's the 3-second review of that? I just missed it all.
Yeah, you were on the phone. You have to have a timeout to issue a challenge.
Oh.
It's not just automatically reviewed anymore.
But you can challenge it, but only if you have a timeout.
Only if you have a timeout.
Okay.
Okay.
Good to know.
And Wayne had used his last one to set up the defense, and then he changed the defense, which ended up working out well.
Yeah.
They took Johan Munch off the ball at the baseline, put him back deep, put Isaiah C. on the ball, and the Beavers ended up doing a nice job in terms of denying in the ensuing inbounds play in the half court a good shot.
Yeah, I mean,
they had a
good,
it was just a forced wild three that Stefanowicz put up, and it was an air ball, and the Beavers survived. Okay, you had a call off air, which maybe you can review for us when you get a chance. Mike and Tiger are kind enough to join us this morning to get things rolling. Mike, welcome to the Joe Beaver Show.
Hi, Mike and John. How are you today?
Good.
Thank you.
Good, good. I was at the game last night, and, it was a kind of a typical first game of you see some good things and you see some bad things, and you're glad that you can win with an ugly win rather than a pretty loss, I guess. So I'll be back on Friday looking forward to seeing the next step forward on basketball.
Yes.
But I was in there, and it was – you know, we sit in the same seats all the time in the lower balcony on the corner by the men's bench. And it was definitely warmer than usual when we got – usually you get there and it heats up through the course of the first half. But I actually talked to Sarah Elcano about that like last year. And she said that once they turn the boiler on for heating Gill in the winter, it's kind of like off to the races and you can't really control it. And so, like, during the day of a basketball game, they'll, like, open windows and doors to get Gill as cold as possible. Mm. Everyone that works in Gill is, like, freezing cold. And then they just hope it, you know, warms up as slow as possible during the course of the game. But
that's interesting.
I thought I remember in past years they would, like, open the doors in the concourse to, like, at halftime. You'd get a flow of air coming through. But, yeah, it was definitely hotter last night.
Okay.
For sure.
Okay. Well, it's a 76-year-old building, and, you know, maybe there's just some things. There's only so many things one can do in terms of that phenomenon you're describing.
Yeah, exactly. But, hey, I've got a couple more updates on the baseball schedule from looking at other teams' posted schedules. So, in addition to the home games I talked about before, we have University of Portland, March 17th at Portland. And then also on May 5th at the new Hillsborough Stadium. And then we have UC Irvine down there on March 20th through the 22nd.
Yes.
As some other games that have kind of floated up on our opponent's schedules. So even though ours isn't posted yet. So I thought I'd call in and share that. And then one other thing on that call on the line. I thought I heard it from you, Mike, last night. But maybe I saw it online after that. I thought I saw someone said something like our player had his foot on the line when he touched it before.
And if that's the case, and I did say that, that's the only reason that I could think of that they would call.
Were you
because
speculating? Or
I was speculating. There was no explanation given. And as Rich said, their replays showed that it was just. It was a missed call that the ball.
Yeah,
yes,
it was obvious.
Yes, the ball last went off their big man, I can't remember his name now. I don't have the chart in front of me. Zedendorf or something like that. But anyway, he last touched it. The only thing they could have argued was that Johan, when he touched it first, was on the line when he did. But apparently that wasn't the case, according to Rich and Mike Montgomery's view of things.
Okay, well, that's good to know. Because, from our spot, it looked like a clearly blown call. And then watching on the replay on the screen above, so it seemed like it could only be something like that.
Right.
Hey, John, I should have said hi. You know, in the case of radio, where you don't see people all the time, you're never sure. And I was over talking to Steve Fink at halftime, and I should have come over and said hi to you. So.
Oh, yeah, no, that's fine. That's fine. He sat next to me for the first half and then had to take off.
Well, I'm glad Steve came.
The first half.
I haven't seen a lot of him this year.
Yeah, it was great.
That's great.
Yeah, he was there. I was talking to him at the end of half. He's actually a shirt tail relative of some relatives of mine from the Tillamook days. So.
Well, maybe you and I are related because my wife is from Tillamook and her whole family line is from Tillamook.
Oh, really? Well, we're going to have to get together, John, and have a little comparison.
There you go.
Hey, Mike, good talking to you. Thanks for the call.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it. And there's people beginning to study other teams' releases of baseball schedules to find out where the Beavers are going to be on certain dates. As Sidney Poynter pointed out, the UC Irvine release of their schedule, and the Beavers are going there March 20th through the 22nd.
It's an end around to try to find out your own schedule.
Exactly. Doc Fink is just sort of the Nietzsche of SIDs, in that he was prophesying to us back in 17 and 18. First, when Twitter came out, he was the first person to talk to me, oh, Twitter, it's going to change everything. Well, he's right. It did.
I reminded him last night about that.
And then he said in 17 and 18, he was 16, 17, right around, he says, this whole thing, guys, this whole college sports is going to go, it's going to go in directions that we just won't believe what it's going to look like, and the whole thing may collapse on itself. And
I'd like to talk to him again. Last night it was too loud.
How did he know?
And say, what did you know?
he spent so much time out fishing that things come to him as he sits and ponders and fishes and waits and doesn't have to wait long. He's a great fisher person from what I'm told.
He needs to get a bigger boat.
That's for sure. But he was saying, and I remember just sort of that.
I know.
It's going to be all right.
And I would have asked him last night. It was just it's too noisy. Yeah. With the band and everything, but I told him, I said, Mike and I say you were on the forefront of all this craziness.
Let's go to Dave on the Downward Dog phone line. Dave, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Hey, I've got in-laws from Tillamook too, Mike.
So okay, we're all in it together. You guys are all in it.
I have
relatives. I have relatives on the Kilchis River in Bay City, or did. So yes, we're all in this thing together. It's all about Tillamook.
We're all in it. That's correct. We'll have a cheesemaker day one of these days.
Yes, good
compare this. Hey, I just wanted to call in and talk a little bit about Rob Akey and that potential, looming. We're fortunate that he was on staff. Right?
Yes, absolutely.
And it wasn't as a coordinator or a big role like that, but we're just fortunate that we had a former head coach that could step in and knew the ins and outs of being able to do that and manage a staff and a program and a team. That said, people talking about, if this guy gets fired, he deserves a shot. Well, I've got a few comments about that and maybe a question. But, his overall coaching record in the past does not really support maybe what we're looking for. Not to say that he wouldn't be better now, but he hasn't had a great record. So
true.
I think that matters. And I think it matters a little bit that if you pick up in the middle of a season, it's easy to kind of ride a new wave to some victories and get that false sense of really good. I like the guy personally. I like the guy as a person. I think he's a great motivator. But he didn't come here even looking for a coordinator job. So Bray wasn't intentional in wanting to be the head coach, right? Mm-hmm. He kind of lucked into his lap. And I would say that this is probably the same case with Akey. I don't know for sure, but he hasn't been intentional in wanting to be a head coach. For all we know, he didn't want to be the head coach. He just wanted to stay in the program and make a difference and impact some young men and do it on the football field and in a good way. And we're fortunate for that, right? But I guess that leads me to the only question is, anybody even ask if he wants the job? Like, if he were to win out and people are saying he should be considered, but does he even want it?
Yeah, we asked him.
He does. Yeah, no, he does. Make no mistake on that, Dave. He would love nothing more than to ride it out, build momentum, become a strong candidate, convince everybody he's the right guy. And he ought to. Good for him. I mean, that's exactly, if you were in his position, unless you just knew that, hey, I know that I'm just sort of occupying the chair, keeping it warm for whoever comes in next. But no, I think he's a strong enough man in his own belief and conviction about his football acumen and his coaching ability and how well he does connect with recruits and kids and all of that and with fans. He does. So I think he didn't come here thinking, well, this will fall apart on Trent and all step. No, he wasn't thinking that at all, of course. But I'll confirm it the next time I visit with him, but I think he wants nothing more. He wants what's best for the kids and the program, but I think he might think that he and this staff right now could be the answer to that. So, yeah, I think he wants to be, going forward, named the head coach.
Yeah, and that was my biggest concern, was because he didn't seek even a coordinator position. Maybe he just wasn't thinking about being a head coach at all. And, you know, just because it fell into his lap and he said, yeah, I'm kind of liking this, doesn't mean that he really, really wants to do it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And maybe he does, and that's great if he does, and shoot, you know. But I'd hope that there's got to be, you know, I mean, there was a big thing for that, you know, the whole haul-in thing at the time, too.
Sure.
And, you know, the coaching search took us a different direction, and we ended up with Smith, and that was probably the right move at the time. So I just really hope that the committee's, you know, dedicated to looking outside and trying to find the best fit, not just the easiest fit.
They are. No question, Dave. Thank you for the input. Good to hear from you.
It's an interesting thing, and this comes up. It comes up on the post-game call-in show and whatever. It happens. It's probably happening at all the other places that there was a firing. Someone steps in, and then there's a resurgence of energy. And I always just say, you just have to be careful. Yes, you don't want to disrespect the person who's in the position and they're doing really well, but there's going to be some kind of a positive move. I don't know that changes are made and they just drop like a rock. I think there's a positive move for a short while. But you just, as a fan base, and especially, obviously, as a committee or an athletic director looking for your new head coach, you got to be careful about the emotions of all that. And look at their work and see, are they really a candidate for this? Yeah. Not necessarily based on what they're doing right now, but the overall body of work. And I love the guy. I do. I love the guy. And his enthusiasm is incredible. I think the players would run through a wall for him, as we heard M. Christo say. But look at the overall body of work. And I said, this question came up twice, I think, on the Colin show. The long runway, they'll use it. They'll go into December. They'll wait until the season's over, certainly, because there'll be more coaches that'll become available, more prospects.
Sure.
And it'll take time.
It will, and that's very well said, Johnny. I also think there's a possible, depending on which direction they go, it's possible that if there's a real sense of rallying around Rob and the players love him and connect with him and all of that, it's possible that a new staff, depending on who the person is and the composition, may have a role for him. Heck, maybe a D. I've always loved him as a defensive coach in his years at Washington State. So there could end up yet being a role for him and even some of the other people on the staff for that matter.
That would be great.
Let's break on that note. If you'd like to jump in with any input on Game 7 of the World Series, people are arguing a Brooks Hatch said, now Game 7, 1960. He didn't really see that. He has a vague recollection of it. I didn't see it. I've read about it my entire life. Brooks Hatch made a strong argument for the 10-9 walk-off Mazeroski win with all of the ebbs and flows of that game and a pinch-hit home run and all of these things that went on in that Game 7 being the greatest Game 7 ever. But, you know, we are prisoners of the moment and the recency bias. Yeah, there's a lot of people saying that was the best Game 7 ever in the World Series in one of the best World Series ever. Are you all in on both, or haul in on both? If you are, feel free at 541-497-5356 to say, and here's why, because that seventh game had everything and you watched every moment of it, but did you? The Beavers were playing at the same time. So I didn't have the experience of every pitch of that game, but if you did, and it rates very high in your experience as a baseball fan, would love to sort of hear you talk about that, amongst other things. The secondary lead and the primary lead. I want the good leads. 541-497-5356 on the Joe Beaver Show. Okay, open phones and text 541-497-5356. Quick question, just I'm curious because words end up being, you know, I mean, what we trade in. Ted Robinson, when I said yesterday, I was talking to Ted before I interviewed Mike Montgomery, knowing they had a close relationship. I said, I'm going to talk to Mike for a few minutes. Ted, what do you got? Anything? And he said, I know that Ted, Wayne had told me, Coach Tinkle, that Ted was the impetus behind Mike Montgomery being selected into the Bay Area Sports Hall of Fame. And Ted said, oh, yeah, I was all over it. You know, the only coach to win Pac-10 championships at both Bay Area schools, that in itself is an amazing accomplishment. Then he said something, and I've been thinking about this word anyway, and I'm glad he said it, because he said, quote, I've always thought that college sports have gotten the short shrift in the Bay Area. And just as we talk about certain words, the short shrift, is there a long shrift? I don't even know what shrift is. Well, you know, we've always gotten the short shrift.
But
we know what
that.
It means, but nobody
that.
Says, I'm going to give them the long shrift.
Yeah, but I've heard that saying. It's an older one.
The long shrift?
No, short shrift.
Oh, short. Yeah, everybody's heard of it. Yeah. Everybody's heard the short shrift. But it got me thinking, too, about, well, this game's kind of off kilter today. And nobody ever really says, hey, this game's really on kilter. And just certain words, I wonder how they come into usage.
Well,
if anybody can enlighten me, feel free.
We do this on the Clue Morning Update because idioms, our whole language is based off of idioms. And they all have a historical beginning. And some of them go back 1,000 years. It's fascinating.
We're going to give the long shrift going forward here to various issues in the world of sport, because college sports, the West Coast, the East Coast bias, the East Coasters always give us the short shrift out here.
Yeah, they
well,
do.
Well, is there a medium shrift or a long shrift? And what's a shrift? 541-497-5356. Guy, thanks for the call. Welcome to the Joe Beaver Show.
Hey, Mike. Nice to hear you guys' voice. Bryce, I'm still up and going, although I was going to play some golf this morning, but couldn't quite do that. It's a beautiful morning. My gosh.
Yeah.
It is nice.
Almost
warm. Almost as warm as Gill Coliseum. It's about 57 degrees, and
yeah,
it feels
guy,
pretty good.
Yeah, you work the you know, behind the scenes. Can they turn the heat down up there?
Well, actually, they can, and I think I know the person who can talk to, because a couple weeks ago we were there with the Pee Wee, the Pop Warner football.
Yes.
And it's a big thing, goes on every year, and I was there. They had to delay the last couple of games because of some of the weather, because there was lightning that day and everything else. So I come in, I'm supposed to be running a post-clean crew, and the last game has only just started. And one of our admin, her son, is one of the players on the team, and he was down there for a while, and he's actually a very good player. He's actually was picked on the Western United States team to play on that, because he was that good. But he also got a serious injury, so he's down, which is very sad for a child that young.
Absolutely. That's too bad. Guy, what else?
At the end of the game, all of a sudden, there was still 58 seconds left. His team was up by 2 touchdowns, and all of a sudden, all the lights went out.
Oh, wow.
It went dark, totally dark in Reser Stadium. Mm-hmm. And I got, oh my gosh. So I thought, I know a couple people to call. I called one and sent him a text. couldn't get a hold of him. Then I called the next one, and he answered, and I could tell he was kind of asleep when he woke up. I said, oh, okay, guy. And then about 60 seconds later, we had the lights back on.
Oh, wow. That's pretty good.
Well, there was people up in the stands or trying to walk down, and I tell you what, when they suddenly go out, it's hard to even see your steps.
Yeah, I remember that was a frightening day all over the community, and fallen limbs ended up, you know, all over the place. And so anyway, I don't know. We got you on that about the warmth of Gill. But you called about something else, I think, Guy. What's up?
I did. Okay. Two things. One was the World Series.
Yes.
That was so fantastic that night that on the west side, on a bunch of the screens up on the fourth floor, you know, the floor for all you guys and everything else and all the media. And then also in the suites, we had six different people in the suites that said, I'm not leaving. They're watching the game.
Right. Right.
And what an ending to that game. I didn't even know quite how it ended. I was going up the elevator, the worker elevator on the west side, and it was people with it on their phone. And I said, well, what's it at now? This is what I saw just a little bit ago.
Right.
And next thing I knew, I'm watching Dodger players on the field. Well, we got championship. I didn't even know how it ended.
Yeah,
it was. Found out later how it ended. That was beautiful.
Yeah. Hey, Guy, it was a riveting spectacle that everybody seemed to be in on. It felt kind of like old times in our country. Even hearing the national sports talk shows paying attention to it and talking at some length about it told me, well, the World Series still has the ability to generate that kind of conversation, even in a world where people are talking about the Dallas Cowboys and their potential draft pick every day. The World Series did take center stage for a while, and it deserved to.
And I think so, too. That was fantastic because people talk about, oh, that's just an older sport, and it takes so long. Well, I'll tell you what, every instance of it, every little pitch, slight bouncing off the ball, whatever, and fouling it off of the way, every bit of it is on. And you can hear it in the crowds, you can hear it in everything, and that know that there's a whole bunch of the country still following it all the time. I loved every second of it, and I didn't even know how it came out until later. I went back up because I always go around. I'm checking different areas on how if everything's all done up right, cleaned up right. And I got up over to the side where John's usually at, just off the side of your booth.
Yes.
And I was asking the lady. Says, "Whoa, what happened there?" And there was a guy off to the side. He was still on his computer. He says, "Hey, please quiet down. We're just trying to work."
Yeah, those are writers working. That's true.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. It's like, oh, my gosh, I'm so sorry. But I was trying to ask her, how did that end? What happened? And she just looked at me, and she had big eyes, too. It's like, God, she didn't want to say anything because that one guy was kind of abrupt. But
hey, Guy, thanks for the good stuff, man. Good.
Now, wait a second. There's one more thing.
Okay.
Now, and walking around, I check out all the places, even through Valley Football and stuff, and I was checking out every floor over there, making sure everything is done up right. I went down over by where our head coach's office is, and I look in there, and it's going, wait a minute, nobody's touched this place. Mm-hmm. I didn't notice where our interim head coach's office was at. I didn't look in all of them, but I looked over because there's a few places I want to check, and so nobody has taken space in there.
That's right.
And I think they've done that on purpose because you're not the head coach, so you don't get to sit in there.
No, you're right about
that. And that was beautiful. Yeah. And then I found out later the next morning, my gosh, we had a fire in our players' locker room down on the base floor. And it's like, what? And that happened only 1 hour after I clocked everybody out.
I heard about that.
That was amazing.
Yeah. Is everything okay? Okay.
Actually, it wasn't really big, but it got a little bit flooded. They're going to be putting in new carpet, and they're going to be doing some stuff. And they should be maybe back into it by tomorrow, if not already today.
Hmm.
It was, I mean, you talk about a crazy weekend. It was beautiful.
It was that. Thanks a lot, Guy. Good talking to you, man. Nice to hear from you. Johnny, let's get to the texts, if there are some. And Guy, it does make a good point. The office is unoccupied, the head coach's office. And I'm trying to remember, I think in 17, that was also the case when I interviewed Corey Hall. But Rob Akey just has kind of, he shares a little cubbyhole of an office, one of the smaller ones within the building, because he came here to be the special assistant to the head coach, not a coordinator or anything else, but a special assistant to the head coach was his role. And as callers have pointed out, Mike and I think Dave and others, we were lucky to have him. And a person of his caliber, character, experience, all of those things to be in that seat when this happened. And he has not usurped Trent's office. That head office, as Guy pointed out, is unoccupied. We go in there to do That's our pregame cool. interviews because it's a quiet place. We mm-hmm. close the door behind us. But it's an empty office and kind of a weird feeling because I've been going in there year after year after year. All the coaches have their photographs up and their jerseys hung and the special sort of mementos they've gathered over their years in the game, as did Trent. And just to see empty shelves and nothing on the walls is kind of a weird feeling.
That's interesting that you say that because, you know, when you do what we do, we're here through all of it and they come and go.
They do.
And sometimes, you know, if you're working with someone who's not real friendly, you just kind of think, yeah, let's see how long you're here because I'll outlast you. It's like in the movie The Natural.
Yeah, it's not a great line from Max Mercy. Duvall is Max Mercy.
They come and they go.
But it's a true line. It's true, even though he's sort of the guy that, you know, I mean, he's a guy that, you know, Redford doesn't like. And he's just, yeah, you're going to make me a good story. Whatever happens, I'll get the story. But he does say, they come and they go, Hobbs. They come and they go. You'll go. I'll still be here. Now, it's not the nicest thing to say, but there's some truth because Max Mercy did survive Hobbs and everybody else.
All right. So CVB sent us this. It's the definition of shrift.
Oh, good. No one's ever heard the word other than in the context of they gave him the short shrift. I've never said, well, what did he get? An even shrift? No, never. So, what is the word?
It's kind of long. So follow this. Old English script, confession to priest, followed by penance and absolution. Verbal noun from scrifan, quote, to impose penance. From an early Germanic borrowing of Latin scribe to write. From pi, root scrib, to cut. The Germanic borrowing produced nouns for penance, confession in Old English and Scandinavian, such as Old Norse script, penance, confession. But elsewhere in Germanic, it means writing. Now I have to close this and open this because it keeps going. The sense drifted early towards simply absolution received after confession, short shrift, 1590s. Originally was the brief time for a condemned criminal to confess before execution in a sentence of punishment without delay. The figurative extension to little or no consideration is attested by 1814.
That's a detailed explanation and an interesting one and far more profound in its origin than the way we gave him the short shrift. We get the short shrift out here when it actually sounds like a matter of great gravitas in the original usage. So thank you, CVB, for that.
Robert sent the same thing. Merriam-Webster's, it's really long. I don't want to read it.
I'm glad it's Merriam-Webster, though, and not necessarily. It's different in verbiage, I would imagine, than the AI-generated stuff.
Yeah, it's Merriam. Let's see. Short shrift. We've got a confession to make, but we'll keep it brief. While it's technically possible to make long shrift of something, you're unlikely to find long shrift in our virtual or actual pages anytime soon. Short shrift, on the other hand, has been keeping it real, real terse, that is, for centuries. The earliest known use of the phrase comes from William Shakespeare's play Richard III, in which Lord Hastings, who has been condemned by King Richard to be beheaded, is told by Sir Richard Ratcliffe to make a short shrift. As the king,
there we go. It
longs
all comes
to
back.
See your head.
Comes back to Tillamook and Shakespeare when it's all said and done. What else? Hey, thank you guys, CVB and Robert Hirsch. Thank you guys so much. That's cool. I'm glad to hear it. Now I understand it a little better. But I've just heard short shrift my whole life and never ran out of kind of shrift. Now I see why. What else we got?
Jeff in Colorado says, hi, guys. I had the pleasure of watching the game on ESPN Plus last night. While the game itself I found less than inspiring, I loved watching Mike standing up, apparently raving at the officials during that out-of-bounds call with 2 seconds left. I saw you, too. That was a fun watch. As for the game, I was saddened, as I often am in recent years, to see the paltry attendance. Being the huge Beaver basketball fan that I am, I can't imagine living within an hour of Gill and not making it to game one, let alone every home game for both the men's and the women's teams. The only thing that tempered my ire was when I checked in on the Portland game, the Utah game, and several others that all seem to be played before empty houses. I guess that's the price to pay when so many games are available to watch from the comfort of your own home these days. But I can't help to think both teams would thrive if they got to play in front of 9,000 fans watching and cheering with Mike's enthusiasm in that last 2 seconds. I wish I could have been there, but I was in spirit, and he's in Colorado. That's
hey,
Jeff.
Thank you so much for that, Jeff. And Tony in Newport, our friend Newport Tony, sent me a screenshot of me standing and bemoaning the call, which I'm glad to say was confirmed by replay by Rich and by Mike Montgomery as not being the right call. I overreacted, as I'm wont to do, but thank you for sending the screenshot of that. It was a little disappointing in terms of the size of the crowd. Yes, it was. But the thing I liked was that the Beavers learned some things about themselves. They did play much better in the second half with respect to their offensive attack. 2 points in the paint at halftime, John. One basket in the paint in the first half, and that was a putback by Noah Emmenhauser. But in the second half, behold, 18.
They got all
points.
These big guys. They should be scoring more.
We've got a full hour to go. Lindsey Bohanek at 12:30 to talk some Oregon State volleyball. And Tony from Newport, by the way, says he's coming up. He's going to come up for our Friday roadshow. And we don't know if it's Masogi. I believe it is Masogi. Maybe Masogi, but Masogi Sauna and Plunge, 220 Northwest 2nd Street, downtown Corvallis. That's 11-1 on Friday with the Joe Beaver Roadshow. We'll tell you more about it as the week goes along on Joe Radio.
Time to enter the Magic Kingdom.
Denise, would you kindly clear the wheels?
Okay, here we go. On three. One, two.
Tweets and texts, faces and books. Tweets and texts and faces and books.
Seems like it's more about FM and color TV.
In such an age as this, is there any room left for something as simple as
radio?
We believe there is.
Touchdown, Beaver! He's got a chance to go! 20, 15, 10, 5! Touchdown, Beaver! Back in the end zone! Caught! Touchdown, Beavers!
The Joe Beaver Show is on the air with Mike Parker and John Warren. Two men on a mission to prove
that AM radio is a viable and modern source for news and entertainment.
So gather the whole family.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
If you don't have one, fret not.
I'll have the management send you up a radio.
Be a part of the triumphant return of amplitude modulation.
This is the big one, boys. This is the one that brings us back.
Soon, AM radio will reign king once more.
It's the Joe Beaver Show on the home of the Beavers.
Cool beats. Kill me.
1240 Joe Radio.
Into the second hour on the Joe Beaver Show. Lindsey
sophomoric.
Yeah. Yes, and I am no fan of sophomoric humor, as I plan on attending A Night at the Opera at the Salem Downtown Theater on November 16th.
Humor. The dumber it is, the funnier it is.
That's what my dad, I love my dad, he would, the Three Stooges, what a joke. Anytime they would come on, he didn't like them. He was dismissive of the Three Stooges. But I would, late at night, occasionally come home, and Dad's there, and after my mom had passed, and I was living at home, but I'd get home, and I'd turn on the TV and take the manual and turn it. There were like two channels in Cottage Grove. I'm commuting back and forth to school, and my dad would sometimes be awake. And as much as he dismissed the Three Stooges, I have great memories of coming home, turning on the TV, and all that was on that late hour, there they were, And we would sit there together and laugh.
And he would laugh.
And he would laugh, and I would laugh.
And I'm thankful
for the same thing with Don Rickles, my parents, you know, trying to say, my mom, oh, that he's so terrible. He's mean. I hate him. Oh, he's awful. Then later in life, he'd come on, Carson, sit down and start talking about, you know, look at Ed McMahon, face it, Ed. Face it, Ed, you're fat. You know, and just my mom would start laughing and off we'd go. And they would crack up almost to the point of tears. And I would say, yeah, you really do hate him, don't you, Mom? So Don Rickles, the Three Stooges, late night laughter, yeah, I'm grateful, yeah, for. So let's get, as we, Lindsay Mahonik will join us at 12:30.
Shane from Corvallis, yeah, says, I used to be a Wayland security guard for Oregon State, and we had the same problem with the main area. And yes, we did have to open the concourse stores, he says, probably doors, from time to time to cool it down. Don't know if things have changed since I left doing security for them back then, but he remembers it being very hot back in the day. I'm going to go back up to the top here for the most recent. Amy, for Mike, since you're an old movie fan, you may be aware that the Dark Side Cinema has very old movies showing weekly, different genres, occasionally maybe monthly. They have silent movies with live music to accompany.
I didn't know that.
7, they're playing 3 Laurel and Hardy movies with music.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Do we know which films? Because I know some of them by name, and if they're showing the film Liberty, I might skip trivia downtown at Treebeards to go see Liberty. Do you know what the triple feature involves? Laurel and Hardy, the best, the most brilliant comedic shorts, 20-minute films ever made, I think, by Laurel and Hardy, and they made a bunch of them. You talk about quaint. No one else, let me think, no one knows. Three other families did this growing up that I can think of, and maybe your family was one of them, Amy, or wherever, I don't know. There was a pizza parlor in Hacienda Heights, and they would play while you're sitting there having your pizza. They'd have a movie screen and put movies on, and the movies would play, you know, the actual films on a screen when you're having your pizza. And they were silent movies. And I remember seeing my mom, I'm probably 10, 11 years old, 9 or 10, my mom falling off the little stool at the pizza parlor watching Laurel and Hardy in Liberty, a 1929 silent. She fell off the chair. She was laughing so hard. And we would go on occasion to that pizza parlor, and all request pizza parlor, can you please put those Laurel and Hardy? Oh, yeah, yeah. And the guy would go back and spool the movie up, wow, and put it on the big screen, and we'd eat our pizza and laugh at Laurel and Hardy. Amy, I appreciate that heads up.
My grandmother used to play the organ for silent movies in Chicago, and her name was Up in Lights.
Very cool.
Yeah, way back in the day.
Amy, thank you for that. And I do like The Dark Side. We go there fairly often, but I didn't know they did when I say fairly often, 2 or 3 times a year, but that's kind of often in the life that we live. So what else you got there, Johnny?
Well, somebody sent a connection to The Dark Side.
Oh.
And it's pre-show and feature, and it looks like Gamera the Invincible. It's an old science fiction scary show.
Okay, so that'll be the feature with some Laurel and Hardy shorts beforehand, maybe.
Must be.
Okay.
That's
the old-fashioned way, that's for sure.
Yeah. Okay, Rob in Austin says, it's truly an honor to listen to you call basketball games. It was a terrible call. It was a proper reaction because, frankly, I was doing the same thing in my living room. The bigs need some more beef dinners, but there's some potential there. I did see a running hook attempt, and I'm sure my great uncle Tony Vlastelica is smiling down on that.
I bet he was, Rob. And did you hear Johann Munch in the radio postgame show? It's one of those rare things that happen in this life, a rare moment, but it happened when Johann, who's gotten stronger, he's gone to work in the strength and conditioning program of Chandler Morrison's, and Johann sat down with Marlon Stewart in the postgame courtside after the game. When I asked him, hey, you're stronger this year, tell us a little bit about your offseason program. And he referenced old interviews that he and I did last year. Rarely do athletes do that or have that kind of frame of reference. He said, well, as I used to say to you in the pregame things that we did last season, my biggest goal was to get physically stronger. And I've been working on that, and I think I've done that. And he talked about adding about 19, 20 pounds of muscle, and he's showing it. He's going to be an impact player this year, and he was. His game in the second half, I think, is the reason the Beavers won the game.
Yeah.
I mean, there were other contributors, certainly. But Johan Munches, 10 points, and he had none at halftime, hadn't even attempted a shot at halftime. Scored 10 and was just an active enough player inside.
Do you think that
he helped the Beavers prevail last night?
Was last night a harbinger of what's to come when it comes to spreading the scoring? There was nobody who is the scorer.
Right. I think so.
Four guys, 10 points.
Yeah, and one guy with 12.
Isaiah and another had guy 12, with 9.
And then four with 10. And
yeah, another Mateus starter.
Sommer hit three threes for 9.
Yeah. Yes.
So, yeah, I think that's what Wayne has talked about.
And that's a good part sign.
It is. There's versatility. It's a resourceful team. I agree with Rob about needing – there needs to be, and Wayne's talked about, we got to get these guys more physical and stronger, and that can be a mentality thing. They may not – Yak may still have work to do in getting stronger in his body, but he's a force. He can be a force. They've got to play. I hate to borrow Harder's old phrase, but he used it. And Pat Riley used it too later, getting it from Harder when Harder was like his D coordinator, when Riley had those physically punishing Knicks teams. Harder was his DC, so to speak. And Riley would talk about, well, we played with great force tonight. I remember the first time I heard Riley say that after a game, I laughed out loud because that was Harder's term when he had, as Bud Withers wrote about and hated here, but great rivalry games through the years between Ralph's teams and Harder's teams in the 70s. That was an unbelievably intense set of games.
Yeah.
No doubt. You may have hated them. But I think some of us fondly remember at least the intensity, the bristling intensity of those games. But Harder would say, well, we played with great force tonight. We played with force. Whatever that term means, Johan Munch played with force in the second half.
Off kilter is a good condition or proper form. Is good condition or proper form, John in Florida.
Well...
He says also, kilter is good condition or proper form.
Oh, good condition and proper form, but no one
ever
says...
So if you're off kilter, you're
no
not.
One ever says, boy, Isaiah C's stroke is on kilter tonight.
No, we don't.
No, we don't say on kilter, even though it sounds like we could.
No.
And maybe I should, but we all say a little off kilter tonight. Anyway, what else you got?
Thank you
for that.
Bob Key sends this in. Tuesday, November 11th is... A Night with Laurel and Hardy. So next Tuesday.
Thank you, Bob. And I appreciate it, Amy. Bob and Amy looking out.
And Amy corrected it too. Okay,
that's
a
week from a week from tonight, then.
Yeah. Putting Pants on Phillips.
Okay. That's funny. It is good. That's a good one.
Do Detectives Think?
I don't know that one.
And The Finishing Touch.
I don't know that one either, but Putting Pants on Phillips is one of their classic shorts. They were absolutely brilliant comedians. I thank you for that. I like it.
S says, with the lack of production at the quarterback position, I'd be surprised if the staff didn't put Tristan Tia in more often, maybe even start him. You're playing for the possibility of 5 wins, but more the probability of 3 total wins. It might go a long way to possibly keep him with the next step.
Well, that's an excellent point, S. And I would, because of, and Coach Akey took up the whole 5-game thing yesterday, 5-year thing and redshirting, but Tristan's only played in 1 game. And I'm with you on that. I'd love to see more of him. I know that the staff, very high when he signed and very high on his potential and his future. And it's not as though they are fighting for bowl eligibility per se, so I kind of like they're not. When I say per se, you say, what do you mean per se? They're not. a very, very small, slight part of me thinks, well, if you run the table and go 5-7 and there aren't enough bowl qualifiers and you're hot and a commodity, maybe you get one of those. I don't know how that all works, but occasionally a 5-7 will sneak in because there aren't enough qualifiers. So, I've held out that slight hope. That's why I said you're not playing for bowl eligibility per se. I know you're probably almost certainly not going to go. I get it.
It does happen.
But you understand it has happened. So again, we're always looking. These are the good old days. We're always looking for the bright side, always looking on the bright side of life, as Eric Idle counseled us too.
Actually, that came up on the postgame Colin show a couple of weeks ago, or maybe it was last week. I don't remember. And then so someone said that. I said, well, I suppose it can happen, just like you just said. Then a texter said, I thought the Pac-12 outlawed their teams doing that. And the only answer I could say was, yeah, probably in the first iteration of the Pac-12
that
was 100
years
old, but it's kind of a new deal now. It may not be the rule.
I don't think Teresa go, oh no, we had it. No, I don't think there's certainly bylaws and all of that were invoked for other reasons to collect $255 million.
Right.
But I don't think we absolutely will not allow a 5-7. It's like we absolutely need to have the ability to bet on pro games. What did that? I still don't have a good answer on that. But Teresa's not going to die on the hill. We're not letting a 5-7 team go.
Probably not.
So what else on the text line?
The same person yesterday who wrote in, Lou Tanzelli's younger brother Paul was the point guard on CHS state title team in 1980. Wrote in and said, Game 7, 1975, Red Sox, Red Sox.
Okay, what's this person's name?
I don't know.
Whoever you are, overruled. I'm sorry, go Fred Gwynn on you. Game 6 is better.
Of that series.
Discuss. That's 1975, it. I'll leave it at that.
Game 6.
Game 7 was good, but Game 6... is one of the all-time great games in baseball history, period. So were you referring to Game 6, the Tanzelli
texture? That was 50
texture?
Years ago. How do you know Game 6 versus Game 7 in
I
that
saw
series?
Them both and no.
Were you there?
In my heart, yes. Just in my heart, I was at Game 7 in 1960 because I read about the big home runs and the unlikely result. Tony Kubek taking a bad hop off the neck. Mazeroski hitting the home run and running around, waving his helmet around with fans kind of escorting him down the line at third. Some images that none of us will ever forget seeing them in the juvenile sports literature books of our happy youth.
Yeah. Okay, let me keep reading.
Thank you. So take that on, please, Mr. Tanzelli Texter, whatever your name is. You mean Game 6, don't you? I don't think Game 7 in 75
no,
was better.
They might say, no, you're wrong.
I don't think Game 7 of 75, though, was better than Game 7 of this World Series past, but Game 6 might have been better than the 7th game of this most recent World Series.
I don't know who this texter is, but they want to know if Sarah Elcano will be on the show
this
week.
That's a good question. We're reaching, we're efforting. She is so busy with so many things that she said she may need to take a little bit of a respite, but we're going to try to regroup with her as early as next week, if not later this week.
John says, what was the last play of the game with the out-of-bounds play? I still don't know the call. I was unimpressed with our entry passing to the block or the lack of the passes.
Yeah, that's a good point. I thought it got better in the second half in terms of looking for the entry level, the entry passes to the post, and some high-low action that I thought was better down the stretch. Johnny, didn't you feel like that? I mean, they got some high-low looks and guys roll into the hoop for looks at the rim. Yeah. In the first half, I didn't even think there was even much of an attempt or a concentrated look at trying to get guys posted and get the ball to them. I thought the Beavers did improve on that. There were a few passes that were a little slow. A little lazy. Fetterson. Noah Fetterson's the joker I was trying to think of. I remember one time there was a kind of a slow bounce pass into the low post, extended slightly, and Fetterson just came around and stole it. So that's got to be improved. I agree. That's a fair observation, but it did get better in the second.
I'll tell you, watch film, because they run the back door very well.
I was impressed. I heard myself saying a number of times, another nice cut, well executed by this North Dakota State University outfit. They ran their stuff pretty well.
They ran the back door, and there was one time, it was a turnover, obviously. The guy was supposed to cut. He didn't. And the bounce pass was there, and he didn't cut.
It's about the only time where I saw that. They would, he didn't go back door, came through the front, the ball goes out of bounds, and the Beavers get it back in a tight game. That was a big play.
All right, Stephen Salem. Google says Dan Rather is an SHSU alum.
Oh, my gosh. That's big time.
Really? I thought he went to Washington State.
Well, almost all the great journalists did in the Edward R. Murrow School, but I'd never heard of Dan Rather being up there, no.
Can you guys speak next week about potential tailgating spots in Tulsa next week? Going to the game and would love to know where to see other Beaver fans.
Well, okay. We'll see what we can do on that. Again, that's another,
here's the other one.
City and outfit and team and program I know nothing of, but we'll try to learn about tailgate spots if we can.
Huntsville is where Texas carries out executions.
The prison city. Honestly, when you look it up, do the quick, you know, whatever cursory Google, AI, Gemini, whatever those search engines you use for, comes up. Huntsville's known as the prison city, and they're known for all the high number of correctional institutions. So I don't know what hotel we're staying. I don't know. We'll find out more.
Okay.
About it.
This is funny. Yeah. I think our friend Tyler is confusing Yak Yak with Yakety Yak. He says, it just can't. I'll just come out and ask, how many times was Mike tempted to finish his sentence with, "Don't talk back," after saying the name Yak Yak last night.
I got a line or two from Jason Swigard, our friends with Doc Sprague and 1080 The Fan in Portland. Jason texted me, or Doc Sprague, Brandon Sprague texted me something along the lines of, Jason says, "Don't talk back." And but it is Yak Yak. And part of me, I need to talk to Yak himself about, you know, what has he heard in his life about his name? I'm sure quite a bit of different jokes and things about it. I want to see, he's probably proud of his name and his heritage.
Absolutely.
So I get it. And that's funny. That is funny, Tyler. And
well, it's
what
unique.
Jason Swigard said is funny. Yes.
It's unique.
It is unique.
And any unique name should be able to be asked about. What's the origin?
Yes,
there's
exactly.
A history here.
And in fact, Spencer Newell breaks it down in an excellent article that you can access on beaverblitz.com. The backstory, the inside story on Yak Yak and his rather harrowing upbringing and his parents fleeing the South Sudan Civil War, the second one, I believe, that occurs between 83 and 2005. And Yak was born in Kenya, and they left Kenya when he was two, but his parents had fled to Kenya, escaping the ravages of the Civil War. I mean, these are not things that come up that often in my own history and making notes on players. You know, I think, you know, it's a little bit like Bob Uecker in Major League. Vaughn, a juvenile delinquent in the offseason.
You know, from the California Penal League.
Yeah, that's good stuff. And at least he slipped that in during the course of the broadcast. You know, you don't have, I haven't had ever, you know, any time writing about parents fleeing a civil war and being born under those circumstances and then moving from Kenya to Australia. I mean, he has a fascinating backstory, and we'll learn more about him as we go. But Spencer Newell does an excellent job with a story on Yak, available now at beaverblitz.com.
And it would be a good question, because there some cultures may have it where you do that. You give the first and last name as your name. George wants to know if there's any Friday roadshow, because it's not on the website.
Yes.
Well, we'll get it on the website.
Here we go. Real quick, George, just to let you know. Thank you, Old Dubai. We'll be at Masogi Sauna and Plunge this Friday, 220 Northwest 2nd Street, downtown Corvallis. 220 Northwest 2nd, Masogi Sauna and Plunge. It's one of the new businesses in downtown Corvallis. And listen to this. The Groovy Blends food truck will be parked out front, serving, I've never known how to say the word. I've only seen it in print, but I believe it's acai bowls. Is that correct? Acai bowls.
Nice.
And fruit smoothies. You can enter to win lots of great raffle prizes, an item from Plant Posse in downtown Corvallis, a pack good for three visits to the ultra hot sauna and infrared sauna and cold water plunge areas. Different temperatures. You're welcome to try it out. You can come try out these ultra-hot and infrared sauna and cold water plunges, both. You're welcome to try them out this Friday. So that in itself would be an interesting experience. Be sure to wear the proper gear. Shall we all select our swimsuits? Well, I don't know. Whatever you're going to bring, you can try them out, but you might want to have a change of clothes. But anyway, a pack good for three visits to Masogi. Two pair of tickets to the football game with the Sam Houston Bearcats, a pair of tickets to the men's basketball game against North Texas, volleyball tickets, bowling from Highland Bowl. We'll have a great time this Friday. George, there's your answer.
Newport Beach Tony says, makes no sense that officials cannot review basketball plays under 2 minutes of game time. Beavs could have been robbed. Thankfully, the universe felt all should be equal, and we survived that ridiculous call. Well, he also says yak equals yes in the Sudanese language.
Okay. Thank you for that, Tony, and thank you again for the screenshot. But that the reason, according to Rich, that was proffered when the new ruling was announced was it was taking too long late in games to have constant review. So you can still have a review, but the coaches have got to make sure they've protected a timeout for situations such as that.
Yeah.
We'll take a break and come back with volleyball coach Lindsay Bohanek. And thanks to our friend Rich Burke, I actually have a couple of questions that I could never have generated on my own. Now, AI could have generated it, but I like the qualifiers I see on these stories. Part of this contact was generated by AI, and there could be mistakes in it. They give you that qualifier now in some of the stories and searches that I've done. They give you the qualifier up front.
Good.
Da-da-da-da-da, and there could be mistakes here. But let's go in anyway. It's like all of the warning signs of possible side effects for these drugs, the ad takes longer to go through that list.
Yeah.
And you say, man, I'm going to my pharmacist right now. I need that. Anyway, let's take a break and come back with Lindsay Bohanek on volleyball next on The Joe Beaver Show. We continue on The Joe Beaver Show. Mike Parker with John Warren. Thank you for joining us. Along the way this week, we'll be visiting with Mitch Thompson, Ryan Gibson, somebody from Huntsville, Texas, and Sam Houston State to give us a feel for the Bearcat football team coming into Reser Saturday night. It's an exciting time of year, football, basketball together in a tremendous volleyball season that the Beavers have been in under head coach Lindsay Bohanek and her team. It's really been fun to follow and watch. Great reports from the crowds at Gill Coliseum. Now, the Beavers will be at St. Mary's on Thursday, then home Sunday to Loyola Marymount at 1 o'clock. I believe that's going to be senior day, even though there's still some home matches to come to kind of fill in some of the details and talk about the season that her outstanding team is having. It's a pleasure to welcome head volleyball coach Lindsay Bohanek to the Joe Beaver Show. Coach, good afternoon. How are you today? And congratulations on the great season you guys are having.
Well, I'm doing great, and thanks for having me. And today's been good, getting ready to go to lift and practice soon.
Hey, tell us a little bit, if you would, just to clarify, is your senior day this coming Sunday in this odd schedule you're in the WCC at St. Mary's Thursday? Are you having your senior day this Sunday against LMU?
We are, okay. Yes. And the ceremony will actually take place after the match, where we honor our four seniors. And, yeah, looking forward to having the crowd stay and see that as well.
Now, speaking of the crowds, and we're going to get to some of the things that have helped you have a really successful year, Coach, but the crowds and the vibrant atmosphere at Gill, tell us a little bit about that and what your team certainly in its style of play has won some fans over, and they keep coming back, but it feels as though you've had a really good home court atmosphere. Tell us a little bit about that, if you would.
Yeah, I think in general across the nation, people are just really excited about college volleyball. And I think that's just really made a difference over the last couple of years. And you get to see it on national television or on some ESPN Plus channels. And I think here in Gill and in Corvallis, there's the community really rallies around women's sports. And so now that there's some success around the team, I think people are excited to see what's going on. And what's also great is there's just a lot of families, and our team is really personable and really outgoing and involved in the community. So I think that also helps people just want to support the players and the athletes that we have competing every day too.
It sounds like then a lot of circumstances kind of flowing together to create this vibrant atmosphere for your home matches and so on. And my friend Rich Burke, who does such a great job calling the games, and he's called all your home matches and will continue to do so. But he said to me last night, he called the men's basketball game, but he said that the new League One volleyball is marketing volleyball as, quote, the next major league, unquote. I mean, do you feel like at any level, professional, collegiate, I mean, is there an upsurge in the popularity of your sport?
Definitely. And there's always been a popularity of volleyball on the men and women's side in the world and in other countries. And in years past, you couldn't play professionally in the U.S. You had to go overseas. And so now there's just been a lot of new leagues popping up and new investments into professional volleyball. And I think that just also now is making people excited in college volleyball, because those college players are able to stay in the U.S. and keep showing them their skills at the professional level too.
Head coach Lindsay Bohanek joining us on the Joe Beaver Show.
John Warren here with Mike. How difficult, or what is the prospects of getting into the NCAA tournament through the West Coast Conference? Do they take more than one, or what's the situation with that?
Yeah, so generally with the West Coast Conference, we don't have a tournament at the end of our like regular scheduled conference matches. So you have to just solely rely on winning the conference or having a really good RPI, and that's also based on your win-loss record in non-conference. It's looking like the WCC will be a one-bid team, maybe two. So, yeah, what we need to do is just have a really good last seven-game win streak in order to keep vying for that chance of a tournament run.
Do most conferences have a conference tournament, and do you know the future in the new Pac-12, whether there will be one? Do you favor one?
I do not know what the future is holding in the Pac-12 yet. Most conferences that have conference tournaments are more mid-majors, and it just gives you like another chance to maybe get another team in. I'm indifferent about conference tournaments. I think a lot of the ways that you can get into an NCAA tournament is you have a lot of control over scheduling and obviously recruiting and making sure you have a good culture. So if it's not going to happen for us this year, then like we're moving forward in the right direction and rebuilding this program.
You know, the old Pac-12 was just dominant in volleyball, especially the LA schools. I see USC down at number 17. Nebraska, of course, is always a power. They're number one. Don't know much about Kentucky or Pittsburgh, but just nationally, is it still, how do you feel about the new conference going in as far as how everybody will fare nationally? Will it be a competitive and strong volleyball conference?
Yeah, I'm really excited about Pac-12 volleyball. There's some longstanding coaches from the teams coming in that have historically made tournament runs. Utah State's one of them. Colorado State's historically made the NCAA tournament. Boise State is always a really good program. And so I actually know that it's going to be more competitive and bigger environments. And I'm just really excited to play a lot of these teams moving forward.
Oregon State head volleyball coach Lindsay Bohanek joining us. Lindsay, senior day is always an emotional day. It can be kind of a mixed bag in that, you know, you don't want to bid farewell to players, but if it's as fairly, it looks to me, if I'm reading your roster or right, there aren't a lot of seniors that will be so honored, which means you have a pretty young and talented team that's coming up, but these seniors I'm sure have meant a lot to you. Tell us who will be honored on Sunday and what they've meant to the program.
Yeah, we have four seniors that we'll be honoring. One is Vivian Light, and she's been here for 5 years. Unfortunately, had a season ending injury this year, but has still been involved in the team and has been a captain for us for 2 years and just really has embodied what Oregon State volleyball is. And so really excited to honor her. Another person that we'll be representing is our grad transfer, Tia Shum. She's just been, I'm so grateful that she spent her last season with us. She is such like an ultimate teammate, a great defender, and like a great person. And she's like so stoked to be getting a graduate degree in the business school here at Oregon mm-hmm. State. And so really excited about her. We have Annika Hester, who's been with us for 2 years. She transferred from University of San Diego, and she's just grown a lot as a as a person and a player, and she has aspirations to play professionally. So I'm excited to keep watching her career because I think she's still just getting started. And then the last senior we'll be honoring is Lauren Rummel, who's been with us for 3 seasons. She played her freshman year at the University of Arizona. She's played multiple positions for us and has found her way to the U23 national team and won a gold medal this summer and is one of our best point scorers. And she always tells me if she had like 5 more years of eligibility, she'd choose Oregon State over anyone.
Nice.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, we're just really grateful that these 4 seniors have made such an impact in the program and on the court, and just really excited to celebrate them on Sunday.
And on the other part of that, then, and thank you for, and Lauren's been a guest on this show, and we enjoyed the visit thoroughly. But you do have, you're building, I mean, you must, how do you feel, Lindsay, about the roster you're building and the team that going forward into the new Pac-12 next year that you'll be bringing back?
Yeah, I'm really excited. And you ultimately, when you're taking over a program and rebuilding a program, you want to start seeing the change and growth by year 3. And it's just been really cool to just see the players that we've brought in, some of the transfers we brought in, of just not only how good they are and how like cohesive they work together on the court, but just like how much they love each other as people off the court. And I think that's what people in Gil see, is just the camaraderie amongst the team. And I think that's what's bringing people back, is just they can just feel it and see it. And even talking with alums, they're like, it just looks and feels different. And I think everyone's really excited for the future of this program.
Coach, this is inside baseball, inside volleyball stuff that I don't know your sport well at all. I love it. I mean, it's such a fun watch, but I'm not sure I always kind of know what the thinking and the strategies and ideas are. And maybe you could help us a little bit. And Rich Burke, a good friend of mine, has shared some things, how much he's enjoyed your team and calling your matches and does a great job. But he said that in terms of strategies itself, there's two main offenses, and this may be an oversimplification, but a 5-1 or a 6-2, and that you've moved to a 5-1 after using a 6-2 most of the season. Now, that's inside stuff to me, but what about, have you made some adjustments along the way this year? And if so, how come?
Yeah, I think, you know, as players continue to get better or show some qualities in their game that can help us win or just have an edge over another team, is the reason why you make changes. And you never can predict how good or how fast someone can get better. But like, it's my job as a head coach to create an environment where players can do that. And I have 17 players on my roster and need all 17 to help us win. And I think that's what's really great, is that we train all around volleyball players. And so whether we're in a 5-1 or 6-2, the team as well as my staff aren't scared to make adjustments based on like what we need in order to be successful. And we've won 14 games, so we've been pretty successful this year. But also just really relying on like people's strengths, or like I said, just finding an edge based on a matchup or how people play next to each other. So yeah, there's a lot of like intricate pieces. And again, if I'm not making a change or like trying something new, then that's also not like coaching. I think, you know, like I always want to just try and keep evolving. So, and if something's working, I'm going to keep it.
Yeah. No, that sounds like
don't break something that's not broken.
It sounds like excellent coaching on your part and your staff and your team, your team's at adaptability. You have to have personnel that can make that. And it sounds like that's what you've observed and made some changes. And Rich also says that in terms of the libero, that your season's evolved a little bit. A double libero used a lot, but now a single. Is that accurate? And if so, again, maybe you could explain a move in that direction too.
Yeah, it's kind of a little bit of the message I just gave you, is I was in a, you can play with 2 liberos, and that's internationally what people can do. And you can utilize that in many ways. And so at the beginning of the year, we had a libero that was really, really good at serve receive. And then we had a really good libero that was good at defense. So It's normal at that international level where one passes and one digs. And so we were going on that for a little bit. And then as the season's gone on, like both those players, one got better at defense, one got better at passing. And so it just made sense to put one in the libero jersey and have one help us in the back row as a passer and defender. So it's kind of a testament to like both of those players getting better and, yeah, just being open to making those changes for us as well.
Coach, I have one last question, and it's a naive question about the sport. Every sport has its one position where if you're doing a draft, it's like, oh, we got to get the best quarterback. We got to get the best center, yeah. Although that's changed now. What about the game of volleyball? Is it the best frontline blocker, some big person who can just smash it, or is it the serve? What is the position in volleyball that you think, oh, we got to get the best of that?
I think every coach probably has a different answer because it's probably like something they value. I think if you really want to be elite and win games, you need a really good outside hitter that can pass, dig, hit, set, and basically do everything. Because in crunch time, if the pass isn't perfect or they're kind of like your bailout person. So I really value, and that's why I try and train my whole team to be really good at every skill, no matter what position they're in. But yeah, I think if you have a really strong outside hitter, they'll help you win a lot of games. And we do have one of those
and
on our team.
Yeah, and who is that then for your team that's led the way in that important spot you just described this year?
Yeah, Lauren Rummel's that player for us this year. Yeah,
that's great. And good for her to have a wonderful career here, which isn't over. I mean, Sunday is senior day because it's probably the best date you could find on a weekend and so on, with holidays and things coming up. So Lauren will be honored with three other of your teammates who you mentioned, Vivian, Tia, and Annika. And Coach, we're really excited. I get great reports from people who are loving coming to the matches. I'm glad you're having a huge year going into the new Pac-12 with momentum. And maybe, you know, are you still holding out some hope that, hey, maybe, you know, you win matches here down the stretch, things roll right? Could there be possibly? Are you still thinking about an NCAA tournament berth this year?
I think anything's possible. Okay. The season isn't over. There's a lot of things that are in our control and a lot of things that are out of control. And so the message to my team all the time is let's be present where our feet are and enjoy each day and each match that we get that opportunity to compete and put on that Oregon State jersey. And the rest will fall into place no matter what happens. So yeah, we always want to act like we're never out.
Absolutely. Hey, Coach, thank you for the time. We appreciate it. Congratulations on a big year. Still plenty of action in it and a big future, an exciting future in the new league. Good luck in Moraga.
Great.
On Thursday and Sunday in particular on Senior Day. Thanks for making time for us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Coach. Lindsay Bohanek doing a heck of a job with Oregon State.
I was just looking through the RPI. Yeah. Beavers are 103.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a lot of schools behind them, like Washington State and San Diego State.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of, I mean, each sport has its teams.
How far is it too deep? I mean, you know, she's holding. I talk to people who say, But I mean, if they ran the table.
Well, I'll give you a look. Okay. Like she says, and probably true for a lot of sports, you probably get one out of the conference.
Yeah, right.
Right now, that's San Diego. They are 18-4 overall. The Beavers are in third place, 14-7, but only one less victory than Pepperdine, who's in second place, who is 15-7 overall, and only one game behind Pepperdine, who's 9-2. The Beavers and Washington State are both 8-3, but San Diego is 11-0 and has already beaten the Beavers. They'll get them again.
Yeah,
they do. If they go on a run, they could win the conference.
That's what I'm saying. Go on, beat them.
They're
beat
only,
San Diego.
What, two games behind.
Beat San Diego head-to-head next Thursday, a week from this Thursday at Gill.
Yeah.
Let's take our final break, John, and wrap things up. If any of you have been to volleyball and want to, hey, she's right. We've become big fans. Maybe you've always been, but do you feel in your own household and world what Lindsay just referred to, that this is a sport it's experiencing an upsurge in popularity for various reasons? And have you been going to the matches and having fun with them? Give us a call on that, or Game 7, Game 6 in 75.
Yeah.
And the secondary and primary lead, the good leads. not a good enough lead. I need the good leads. And they didn't get the good leads, either primary or secondary. And that's why Toronto isn't the champion.
What game was it that Reggie hit three?
Game 6, 77. Not a great game, but certainly one of the memorable moments in the history of the sport.
I remember watching that game.
You do remember watching
it?
Yeah, I did too.
Chris Chambliss at third?
I don't know about that, but you know, the Reggie's home runs, Chambliss, his presence, he may have been. You may have that image in your mind, but just Reggie put on a show, and even as Steve Garvey said after the third homer, Garvey said he was quietly clapping in his glove as Reggie rounded the bases.
Well,
let's wrap it up next on the Joe Beaver Show. Well, Dalton Varsho was the batter, a left-handed hitter. The ground ball was picked by Miguel Rojas, and the bases loaded. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, IKS, the quarterback at Cal, JKS. Anyway, IKS is at third base. Here, the world we live in, cue up your killers, the killers. This is the world that we live in. The world that we live in has this breakdown in The Athletic. We'll talk to Ryan Gibson, Oregon State hitting coach, assistant coach in baseball, to talk to him about these matters and how they teach their players. Ryan will join us either tomorrow or Thursday and kind of sum up and wrap up fall ball and the lineup and the approach for the Beavers offensively in the spring. There is an article in The Athletic that breaks down IKF. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa's lead at third with the bases loaded and one out. The winning run, the World Series championship at third, represented by IKF. It says, does The Athletic, he had a 7.8-foot primary lead, which ranked 357th out of 381 primary leads in the World Series.
That's a stat?
Yes. He had an 8.9-foot secondary lead, which ranked 366 out of 376 secondary leads in the World Series.
What is a primary lead and a secondary lead? Do you either lead off or you don't?
Well, okay, there are differences, and we'll have Gippy explain. I know, kind of, but I want to have a coach break it down for us. We say him, and I use the phrase all the time, needs
you
to
do?
Have a better secondary. Yeah, I won't I've say primary. Oh, I've said secondary quite a few times. I feel like Colin now. I said last week that, you know, I mean, that's one of the favorite things Colin does is I said secondary lead 17 times last year, so don't tell me.
I must not listen to enough baseball because I don't even think I've heard it from anybody.
Anyway, the secondary lead was 366 out of 376 secondary leads in the World Series.
That's not very good.
Exactly. And therein is the rub. People are saying that, and this guy's probably going to get hate mail or because he didn't get a big enough secondary lead. That's what the world has come to. Anyway, we'll talk to Gippy about it later. What do we got, Doc, in closing on the text line down the stretch?
Sydney says, Beaver men's soccer has risen to number 13 in the nation. After a resounding 6-0 win over Santa Clara on Sunday, Beavers also swept this week's West Coast Conference honors. Arno Farnos is the Offensive Player of the Week after scoring his 12th and 13th goals of the season, which is already the 7th most single-year goal scored in program history, parenthetically speaking. And goalkeeper John Nicholson is the Defensive Player of the Week after his clean sheet and second assist of the season.
So we need to get, we've done some volleyball today. Yeah. We should try to get soccer this week, too, in a little bit of a week where we have a little more breathing room.
Here's an answer to a previous question. Dan in Beaverton says, we have 6 going to Tulsa. There's no formal alumni event. 12 noon kickoff. If cold weather, we'll meet at local bar restaurant.
Okay, keep us apprised on that, Dan, and we'll try to get the word out. So apparently there is no Alumni Association event for the game, according to Dan. We'll try to fill in some blanks before the Tulsa game next Saturday.
Tyler says, I have a question I wanted to ask Sarah, but please pass it on anyway, even if she isn't on. What happened to the out-of-town scoreboard ticker in Reser Stadium for the entire homestand? It's been replaced with a static advertisement for the tickets website, which is pretty annoying for those of us who like to keep up with everything going on. Okay, I do notice that they answered your call.
What do you mean? Oh, they've kept one auxiliary board
with a score. With the score when and the rest time. Of the ribbon is being used to flash and dash.
I think so.
There's a little corner.
There's usually one. I've looked sometimes at that, and sometimes that ain't on either. I mean, it's mostly on, but there are times that even that gets supplanted by an advertisement. So there's a request for out-of-town scores on the ticker on one of the boards. Gotcha.
This just came in, so it's reference to you. Plus, he didn't run through the base.
Well, and that's the third point. The third point was they break it down. 28.2 feet per second speed, ranked 61 out of 689 sprint speeds in the series. So he was actually running pretty fast. But had he run straight through the plate instead of sliding, he probably would have been called safe. That's how close the play was.
I heard a caller reference the Beavers' 26 schedule. Where is he getting this information? All I can find is the surprise tournament and the Frisco tournament.
By patching together other teams' release of their schedules to the texter. So if you look at teams you think or have a feel the Beavers are going to play, you can look up their schedules that are being released. Hence the UC Irvine thing, March 20th through the 22nd in Irvine. UCI has put its schedule out officially.
I was hunting in the Steens Mountain and set in the pickup and listened to Game 6 and 7, 1975.
Boy, those are good times. Harder to do that now, although, well, not if you have the app. There's an app for that. There's an app for everything. But in 75, 76, this hunter, and weren't they? I bet they were great listens. Tremendous games. The 75 game, Game 6, to me right now, if somebody, what's the greatest game you're, that's probably it. Although Game 7 here a few days ago ranks very high too for those who got to experience it from start to finish, as I did. Fisk's heroics and the Bernie Carbo home run and Dwight Evans's catch. There were just so many things in that game. El Tiante starting and pitch. I mean, it was an incredible event. Game 6 at the Fens in 75. But so was the other one the other night. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you again tomorrow, 11 to 1.